As promised, we're joined right now by somebody who covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. He is the first sports writer to be honored as outstanding journalist by the Nevada Press Association. And you know he's a good friend of the program. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Good to hear from you.
You too, Kevin. Let me talk about UFC 250. There's a lot to cover, but why don't we start with Sean O'Malley? Before we get to the knockout, Kevin, for those who are not familiar with O'Malley, how would you describe him as a person and as a fighter?
Well, as a person, he's a little eccentric. He went into the ring with, I think it was five colors in his hair and a big giant afro that he put into braids, and just a eccentric, different, colorful guy. Like, just love O'Malley's personality. Real fun guy to talk to be around, and he has a huge following that I think was started by Snoop Dogg. So, and as a fighter, you know, he's a striker who is developing a ground game. He's a guy that I think, you know, his striking is boxing quality. It's that good. You know, he needs to get better at the ground game. You know, he didn't get a chance to show it on Saturday, but he certainly is working hard. And I think he's a guy that the UFC has hopes for that can develop into not only a potential champion, but into an attraction to sell tickets and sell pay-per-views.
He is certainly a force standing up. There was that one-punch knockout of Eddie Wineland. What did you make of that one punch, Kevin?
You know, I thought, I mean, it was perfect technique, perfect timing, very quick, right? I mean, I think Eddie Wineland's not what he was at his peak, and he slowed down a little bit, so you have to take that into consideration. But still, Wineland's a veteran, and that's the kind of fight, you know, that was by far the best guy O'Malley fought. And that's the kind of fight that you a young guy like O'Malley, who hasn't had that experienced veteran before, could struggle with. And instead of struggling, you know, he saw an opening. Wineland had his hands on his side, and, you know, there was a huge speed and quickness difference between the two of them, and O'Malley showed it with that knockout. Perfectly placed, right hand, right on the chin, and good night, Irene.
Kevin Ioli joining us. So go back to your other point for a minute. Like, it's not just the power in the punch. It was the way that O'Malley reacted or didn't even react to it. So how big was that fight in terms of him possibly becoming a star within the company, and was it impressive enough to get him a title shot? How far off is he from that?
I think he's a ways off from the title shot, only because the division is so stacked and because there's so much chaos at the top. Henry Cejudo retired after UFC 249, so we're sitting there with, you know, five fighters who really think that they deserve to be in the title shot. So Dana White said that we're going to see Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo coming up probably next month, but no, you know, no definitive time set yet. They're going to fight for the vacant title. Aljamain Sterling, who beat Corey Sandhagen on Saturday, he's going to get the first crack at them. Then you have Cody Garbrandt, the former champion, who had a sick KO on Saturday night. You know, he wants to be back in the mix, and I think prove that he deserves to be back in the mix. Changing up his training and worked out with Mark Henry seemed to do a lot of good for him. But I think it's not going to be quick for O'Malley because of that, because there's a lot of people out there. But I think that's okay, because he needs to develop, and he needs to, you know, I think this is a guy that has a lot of potential, Jim, but you don't want to rush him and put him in with somebody too, you know, too quickly. I think if you take your time with him and just gradually increase his level, he's going to be a star both in the cage and out.
Kevin Ioli breaking it down for us. Kevin, you mentioned Cody Garbrandt. You know, it's kind of tough to know exactly what was going to happen. He had three consecutive losses. He'd been off for more than a year. You never know how somebody like that might show up. What did you make of the first round when he was going up against a Sun Tzu and they were measuring each other? How did he look to you in the first round?
You know, I thought he looked good in the first round, and the thing was, you know, before he was crazy and out of control a lot of times, and I think that's what led him to problems. And this time, you know, you can debate whether he won the first round or he didn't win the first round, but he fought in control, and he fought with his head, and he fought with his emotions in check. And I thought when that happened, Jim, you know Garbrandt's going to do good things, because you know he has that incredible punch that he can land and the knockout power. Kind of like O'Malley does, and he has shown that he has the ability to do a lot of different things. You know, who can ever forget that victory where he won the title over Dominic Cruz? But that turned out to be his last victory 4 years ago. I thought in that first round he showed himself in control and looked like he was a different fighter than he had been, say, in the TJ Dillashaw fights.
I agree. I thought he was very measured. I thought he was very tactical. And then at the very end of the second round, he lands that massive shot to end the fight. What was that moment like for those who didn't see it?
It was crazy. I mean, you know, he did this dip. So his back is up against the cage. Sun Tzu is in front of him. And you see him dip, and he kind of drops down into a squat. And then he comes up and he puts himself in position where if a Sunsell runs up with a knee, you know, he's going to be out. But he saw the opening and he had studied the film and he knew how a Sunsell fought and he knew what punch was coming. And he turned to his right and then threw a perfect right hand and it was right on the chin. A Sunsell went down face first and fight was over. I mean, it was like as good a knockout as you are ever going to see. Mike Tyson and he are friends, and Tyson says that Cody's one of his favorite fighters. And that was a Mike Tyson-style knockout.
No, it's true. Sunsell, he couldn't even get himself steady on the stool in the corner after that for quite some time, for minutes, in fact. And then, Kevin, you've got the headliner, Amanda Nunes, facing Felicia Spencer. When you consider that Spencer, Kevin, is not only not some tomato can, but a top-ranked contender, a legitimate contender, what's it say about Amanda Nunes that she dominated that fight start to finish the way she did?
I mean, Amanda is just incredible, and I mean, she has, you know, I think she's lapped the field twice, you know. She had already lapped the field before. I mean, she beat Cyborg in 51 seconds, you know, she's defended the Bantamweight title a number of times. But now it's like, you know, she's just continuing to widen the gap. I mean, every aspect of MMA was on display on Saturday, and she was patient. I think she could have gotten the knockdown, and maybe if Spencer's corner had any compassion for the fighter, they would have stopped the fight because she was taking a terrible beating in that fight. And I know bettors who had bet on the finish, you know, would have liked to have seen that. But she, I just think Amanda continues to get better. She grows in confidence, and it's going to be a long time, I think, before anybody that's currently in the UFC or that I see on the horizon, Invicta or anywhere else, can come up and challenge this woman and be a legitimate threat.
She's amazing, and she's as classy outside of the ring and cage as she is in it. Now, the absence of a quality opponent, Kevin, for Nunes might be an issue. You know, we could talk further about that. But Dana White's also dealing with a lot of other things right now, including Jon Jones threatening to retire, Jorge Masvidal threatening to retire, Conor McGregor, quote, actually retiring on Twitter over the weekend. All right, let me stop right there. What was your reaction to Conor retiring again?
It's a joke. I mean, the fact that, you know, this is the third time he's done it, you know, I understand what Conor's upset about. Look, you know, he thought that he should have gotten the fight with Justin Gaethje, but he didn't want to be – they offered him to be the backup for Tony and Habib. You remember when he fought Donald Cerrone, he kept saying Tony and Habib is not going to come off. But then he wasn't willing to be the backup in case that happened. So had he agreed to that, then, of course, he would have been there and he would have gotten the fight against Tony, and he would have had what he wanted. So now he doesn't take it. Then they offer it to Justin Gaethje. Now Conor is mad. And so Justin, and I give him credit for this, he says, you know what, if I go and beat Conor McGregor now, people aren't going to think I'm the best in the world. But if I beat Habib, they'll think I'm the best in the world. I want people to think I'm the best in the world, so I'm fighting Habib, and I'm not interested in fighting Conor now. So as a result, who do you match Conor with? And that's a really big problem. Tony Ferguson got beaten up. It's going to be a while for him to recover and get better at be able to fight. Masvidal, as you mentioned, is looking for more money and turned down fights. They offered Masvidal the fight against Conor. He doesn't want to do it. There's nobody in that group at the top. I mean, I think Dustin Poirier would take the fight, and he's highly ranked, but they fought before, and I don't think Conor is turned on by fighting Dustin Poirier. So he's frustrated. I get that. But to say you're retiring, I mean, this is the third time he's doing it, and it's a hollow threat, and everybody knows that as soon as there's a good fight out there for him, that he's going to be back. So it was just a joke.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. All right, so what about Jon Jones? What do you make of the dispute between Dana and Jon Jones?
Well, I have sympathy for Jones there. I understand going up to heavyweight and fighting Francis Ngannou. There are not people calling out Francis Ngannou. Even DC is not calling out Francis Ngannou. So I understand, you know, Jones is going to move up in weight. He wants more money. And so I agree with him on that time. Where I have a problem with what he's doing is two things. You know, number one, he just signed an 8-fight contract. He's one fight into an 8-fight contract. And so I don't think that you can, you know, turn around and say, okay, I'm just into this long-term contract that I just negotiated and I want to get, I want to renegotiate. But even secondarily, and more than that, is I think the UFC, if we had fans at these events, would have done something, even though he's only one fight into an 8-fight deal, had there been fans. But an Ngannou Jones fight for the interim title or for the title is going to be a massive pay-per-view. But how do you pay him $15, $20, $25 million when you have zero gate? And the UFC is probably going to lose over $100 million in gates over the next, you know, say 6 to 8 months. And when you factor those together, that's a lot of revenue out of their stream. You know, they have variable revenue, where teams like the NFL and NBA, you know, they know that they have variable revenue and it's always going to be about the same. So, or greater. So, you know, I understand both sides in that dispute. I think that, you know, a deal probably would have been worked out if the circumstances were different and we weren't in a pandemic. But I think that one's a, you know, that one is one I understand a little bit more on both sides.
So, Kevin, overall, do you see UFC and Dana White changing how they approach money with their big name fighters? Do you think that's going to change?
I don't, you know, and I think that they're going to look at it and they're going to say, hey, look, you know, the brand is bigger than any individual one fighter. And I think that, you know, they will make deals with fighters who they feel move the needle and sell tickets and sell pay-per-views. That's why, you know, Conor has been on the Forbes list each of the last number of years as the highest-paid athlete, because they do that for somebody like that. But they don't have a lot of guys that move the needle to the level that a Conor McGregor moves it. And so as a result, I think they're going to say, hey, the brand is bigger than the individual fighter. And, you know, I find myself on the side of the athletes in disputes in baseball, football, basketball, and hockey all the time. In the combat sports, it's a little more, because you're not paying them simply to win. You know, the New England Patriots, when they had Tom Brady, whether Brady played and got hurt, they were the same, right? There was winning was a difference, but there wasn't a difference in terms of how many people came to their games. And it was all, they got the same amount of money from the league and all that. But in combat sports, it's different, and that is where it's not just about winning and going after a championship, but it's about putting butts in the seat and generating revenue via sponsorships, which Conor does, right? People pay because they want their name on the ring mat when he's fighting, and also pay-per-views. I mean, all that stuff adds in.
Kevin Ioli covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. Once again, the first sports writer to be honored as Outstanding Journalist by the Nevada Press Association, covering a lot of ground as always. Kevin, so good to have you back. Thanks a lot, and we'll do it again soon.
Talk to you soon, Jim. Thanks.
You too. Thank you, Kevin. Well done. All right, he called it a joke. McGregor's retirement, a joke.